Hello everyone, it's about 2:30 a.m. or some ridiculous time, and I didn't do day 16 marching on, so I'm going to do this as my day 16. It's a bit late, but never mind, better late than never. I'm actually sitting doing dialysis and I've got to keep my voice down because Obi is asleep and I don't want to disturb him, obviously. I've just been listening to a post by Kate at Spinner Girl, and she set a topic, what makes us anxious, and I just want to talk, I'll try and keep it brief, I'll try and talk briefly about that, because what makes me anxious now isn't what made me anxious when I was younger. When I was young, I had a real fear of getting lost. I don't have it now. And I very rarely have ever got lost in my life because I've got a pretty good sense of direction, even though I've got more or less no sight. Well, I've got no sight. I've got very little, a slight bit of light perception. I don't use Blind Square or Google Maps or anything. I've got them all on my phone, but to be honest, I don't really know how to use them. And I've always managed without them, so I don't use them. I tend to ask people. If there's no one around, I try and find my own way using my senses and the environment around me. I'm one of these people that if I'm being guided, for instance, around a supermarket, and we're going backwards and forwards, up and down the aisles, round, go down the end, turn left, then come back up, then turn right, I don't know how I do it, but I automatically keep track of where I'm going, so I always know where the door is. No matter how many twists and turns we go round, or how many changes of direction, I'll still know which way the door is. I'll be able to say to someone categorically, if they say, which way is the way out now, and I'd be able to tell them. But when I was young, I had a bit of useful vision. And I don't know why I had such a fear of getting lost, but I can remember one particular day we had I had a mobility lesson. I was only about 8. And I went to a big boarding school, Dalton House, and it was a huge building. And the lesson, what I had to do in this lesson was to find my way around the outside of the building. Now, I know that doesn't seem anything now, but it's a big building, and I didn't really know my way. I knew part of it because that's where we used to go out to play, but I didn't really know the rest of it. And I was going to be using just a cymbal cane because I had enough sight to kind of see my way, and a teacher was going to be following me, but she wasn't going to make herself known to me. And I can't remember ever being taught the way. Maybe I was, but I had to do this, and I felt like I was really on my own, and I was so scared. And when we had these lessons, I used to dread them, and I don't know why this particular day, because I had two friends, well, I had quite a few friends, but my two particular friends, we made up this imaginary land. I think it was called Shua Land, and the creatures that lived in them were Shuas. That's S-H-O-O-E-R-S, Shuas. Don't ask me where it came from. I haven't got a clue. I really, really don't know. Some of them were nice creatures and some of them weren't. They lived in the land, in the sky. And the nastiest of them, we used to really scare ourselves over this. The nastiest of them all was the striped Shua. And I imagined it. I don't know how other people imagined it. I think we did have a description in our minds, but whether we all imagined it the same, I don't know. My description, my imagination of it was like, it was like an Easter egg shape cut in half, like half of an Easter egg. Like it was a rounded top with a flat underneath. It was a bit bigger than that. It was probably the size of a shoe, I suppose. And it had legs, like four legs with like oval feet. And I think it had a tail, and it was striped like a tiger. And it to touch it was like a kind of rubbery material, like not exactly rubber, a cross between rubber and foam. I'm just trying to think of something that it equates to. I can't think of anything offhand. I'll try and think about that, because it must have been something I'd known in my life. Now, the good creatures in this world were called the wispy things, and they were like white, and they were made of the same sort of stuff, but they were star-shaped, and they had a red dot in the middle. And they talk like that. They remind him, they're good guys. They were good guys. They remind me a bit of Pinky, my cat, when I think of how he talked to their voice, the wispy things and the shooers. And we used to tell each other scary stories at night. And I remember there was one night when we had a really bad thunderstorm. I mean, we were only kids and we were scared. And there were no adults came to make sure we were okay. I mean, there was one in the next room, but she didn't come to see if we were all right. You know, that's where our bedroom was. And we said that the sky turned green. And so when we used to tell scary stories about these shooers, we used to say, one dark night when the sky turned green. And we used to, that was enough to scare the hell out of us, because, you know, that's when we had this terrible thunderstorm. And it was also at a time when we used to have a lot of power cuts, you know, enforced ones. And so sometimes we had no light. And that was scary as well. So anyway, the reason I'm telling you this is because this particular day when I was going round, I was absolutely terrified. I was dreading going out there on my own, because when I looked up at the sky, it was really cloudy, and I was thinking of one dark night when the sky turned green, and I swore there was going to be a thunderstorm while I was out, and I was absolutely, absolutely terrified at the very idea of that happening when I was out, and I had a real fear of getting lost. I didn't get lost. I can't remember if I ever really, really got lost when I was a child. I don't remember it if I did. I did get lost when I was at university. When I had my first guide dog, I was just turned 19. Well, I was 18 when I got her, but I just turned 19 like the week before this happened. And it was a day when I didn't have any lectures. I think it was a Wednesday. I can't remember now. And I lived in this house. It was part of a hall of residence, but it had grounds at the back. And the Vice-Chancellor's house was next door. And between them, us, there was like a belt of woodland. It wasn't very dense. It was just like a, you know, some woods. And so I decided to take my dog for a free run in the woods. So I did, and I got lost. And I was a bit scared, because at the time, I can't remember which one it was, but there was some murderer on the loose. And it wasn't near me, but, you know, I kept thinking of it, and I was really scared. And I didn't know how to get back. And I heard this. I was out for about, I think, about 6 hours in all. This was in the morning, and I met this man, and he was sweeping up leaves. And I asked him the way, and he kind of told me. And I don't know whether he was the caretaker to do with the Vice-Chancellor's house or what, but he told me the way, and then I walked off, and I had quite a few adventures. I can't exactly remember what happened, but another dog joined me. It was another Labrador. I had this big Labrador. It was quite overweight. I think it was a male. I had two dogs with me, and I tried putting my dog on the harness, and we couldn't find the way out. And I sat down because I was tired, and I had nothing to drink and nothing to eat. And then I was just going to get up and walk off, and this blooming dog, somehow my shoe came off as I went to stand up, and the dog ran off with it. And so I was in the middle of the woods. It was like November as well, so it would soon be getting dark. You know, so I had no damned shoe. So anyway, I can't remember how I got it back, and then I was staggering around because I was really tired, and I was getting a bit frightened by this stage because I didn't have a mobile phone. They didn't exist back then. And then I heard this sweeping of leaves again. It was the same bloke, and now it was about 4 o'clock, and he went, "Oh, are you still here?" Anyway, this time, that was right. I didn't have my dog's harness with me, I don't think, because, you know, I just took her out from the house down into the field with a lead on. So I didn't even have the harness with me. So anyway, I eventually managed to find my way out onto the road. And I didn't know where I was. It was some way off. But I managed to find my way back. That's the only time I've been really, really, really lost. When it got to the point of being, you know, ridiculous and quite scary. And the dog followed me back. I don't know where he must have belonged to somebody, because he was well looked after. He followed me back, but I quickly dived in the door. He was waiting outside the door. I felt quite bad about it, really. So I had this fear of getting lost. I was always terrified, you know, when I went out with my mum or anything like that, I'm going to get lost, I'm going to get lost. Maybe it was because my eyesight was poor. You know, that probably didn't help, because although I could see a bit, it wasn't enough. You know, I wasn't even partially sighted. That was Lammy snoring. He's in sleep in his basket under the bed. So, it was an irrational fear. I even used to lay in bed at night and imagine being out in the woods and getting lost. This was when I was, you know, little, because we used to take the dogs every Sunday. We used to, when I was at home, you know, when I wasn't at school, or at that school, I went home every weekend anyway, but we used to take the dogs out on a Sunday or sometimes a Saturday and, you know, go in the woods. And I used to have these awful, like, waking nightmares about getting lost in the woods and getting kidnapped by some prowler or something. And so I really was quite paranoid about it. But that's, I don't know when that went, probably after that time I got lost in the woods, and I found out that even after being lost all that time, I still survived. And of course, I don't feel so alone now, because usually when I go out, I've got a dog, so it's not like you're on your own anymore. Not like I felt as a child. I felt like really abandoned. It was actually horrible. And then, but the things that make me anxious now, there's a couple of things. One is if I can't get hold of someone on the phone, and it's not going to be, I've just reminded me, I meant to call my sister tonight and I completely forgot. She WhatsApped me. She was worried about something. Oh dear, it's a bit late now. I'm sure she'd kill me if I contacted her at this time of night. Anyway, it's my husband, Obi, or the kids, who are, one is a young man and the other one's not far behind. He's going to be 18 in August. And there's a kind of a medley of reasons why I'm anxious about that. I think it's because with Ronan, I'm sure I've told this story on here before, but when he was 10 and my niece was 11, they went missing for about an hour early in the morning, like 9 o'clock in the morning from school, them and two other girls, and they were found, but there was a whole lot associated with it that I didn't find out straight away, that he was actually being bullied at school, and it was very traumatic. And I've just had a thing about, if I can't get hold of him, I'll almost go, I even went to the doctors about it, because it was causing disruption in my entire life, even 3 years down the line. But I've talked about that on here. I know I talked about that on here a couple of months ago, because Obi helped me get over that. And then when he was in Nigeria, if I couldn't get hold of him, I'd think something terrible has happened to him. He's had an accident, you know, because life is quite, I mean, he's used to it, but it's quite dangerous out there in many ways. The roads are bad, the cars they drive are death traps. There's no such thing as insurance or MOTs or driving tests. You have a driving license, but anyone can get one. You don't need to do a test. You know, there's the health and safety issues at work. I mean, they do have to wear safety equipment, and they do have a certain level of health and safety, but it's not like it would be here, probably. And, you know, anything, there's lots of trouble. Things are different there, you know, it's a whole different ball game. So if I couldn't get hold of him for any reason, you know, I would absolutely panic, and I would be absolutely distressed beyond belief, like I would be over Ronan. I still get like it, but I don't really get like it now he's in the UK, because I think the panic was that is, if I couldn't get hold of him, what do I do? It's not like he's in this country and I can get on a train and go there. You know, how would I ever, you know, I did have some of his friends' phone numbers or his family's phone numbers or whatever. But things are so different there, because the power's always going out. They can't always charge their phones, so you can't always get hold of people. It can be very hit and miss. But you see, the thing is with him, he knew what state I got in, so some people wouldn't like it, but he didn't mind it. You know, he was patient with me over it. And so if ever he needed to turn his phone off, like sometimes he had to turn it off so he could charge it, otherwise we wouldn't have been able to talk that night. He'd have to go somewhere else to charge it, like a hairdresser's or a bar or something like that, because he might not have any power where he was living. So he'd go there to charge it in and he'd say, I have to turn it off so that it charges properly. And so, you know, if I knew it was going to be off, I wouldn't call it. He'd let me know. He'd ring me as soon as he put it back on. Because if I rang it, even though I knew he told me he was turning it off, and I got the answer basically saying, the number you have called is turned off. The Airtel number you have called is switched off. Please try again later. Or Etisalat, what did they used to say? This person's phone is unavailable. Please try again later. And then there was MTN. What did they used to say? I can't remember. Because he didn't have that recently. He had the other two. He always had different phones and different SIM cards and things. Because he always had more than one network. Because sometimes the networks go off. And then he had to make sure that I could get hold of him. So he always had two phones. And about three different SIM cards with different networks. So even if I phoned it and I knew that he'd said he turned it off, I couldn't stand it. I felt like I was up against a brick wall, and it made me really anxious because I felt like I wasn't in control. So can you imagine what it's like if I ever phoned it and I didn't know, he hadn't told me it was going to be off and it was off. Because sometimes what would happen is he was at work and he didn't have a chance to call me because for health and safety reasons, because at one point he was working on a building site. And he couldn't always just answer the phone or stop what he was doing to ring me. But the battery would go. But usually he'd ring and say, or he'd send me some kind of message on Facebook or something saying, I've only got one bar on my phone, it's going to die. So that he knew I didn't get in a state. But, you know, 9 times out of 10 he'd do that. But there's the occasional times when he couldn't because he didn't realise or whatever. And then when I rang him, then there was, you know, I would be getting the most terrible state over it. I'm not like that now because he's in the UK. I'm not like it at all. I mean, I go all day and I don't speak to him, which would never have happened out there. I mean, he leaves here and he rings, you know, he leaves here like 1 o'clock. He works from 2 till 10 and then he'll ring me about 7, half 7 when he's having his break. Because he only gets like a 20-minute break in all that time, so he'll ring me then. And even if he doesn't ring me, like the other day he didn't, because he didn't have a chance for whatever reason, I don't worry. So I've got over that. I've got over the kids thing a lot as well, because as they've got older, I realise that they are more able to take care of themselves. But I still would worry. I worried about Connor recently when I couldn't get hold of him, and I didn't know if he'd got to his girlfriend's okay, because, you know, you hear these things of people going missing older than him and then, you know, never being seen again or whatever. So I do worry if I don't, you know, if it's a prolonged absence or an unexpected time when I would think I should hear from them, or they know I worry so that they always answer me, even if it's not straight away. If I send a text and if I'm a bit worried, I say, where are you? Even if they don't respond straight away, then I know, I mean, Connor doesn't always respond straight away, but I know he will at some point, even if it's an hour later or whatever. Say he'll put a very short message like, here, or yes, or no, it's just usually one word. Ronan, I do still worry a bit more if I don't hear from him. You know, he wouldn't take that long to answer me normally. So that's one thing. I'll try and work on it because, you know, I've got myself unnecessarily really distressed at times mostly over Ronan, over Connor that time recently, but that's probably the only time I've ever got in a state over him. And Obi, when he was in Nigeria, I was constantly, you know, and sometimes I couldn't get hold of him. I remember one evening, I couldn't get hold of him on any of his phones, and it wasn't like that they weren't off, it was like there was no network on them. You know, you can tell the difference. It's just different, it just doesn't go straight to voicemail or whatever. So this time I couldn't get hold of him, and I was really worried in the end, and I can't remember what happened, but eventually he got in touch, and what happened was he had to ring me off someone else's phone because he was coming home in the dark, and they've got like open sewers in some places, and he'd slipped and fallen into the sewer with both of his phones. And he was okay, but it wasn't a very pleasant experience, as you can imagine. And the phones took a few days to dry out. I think, yeah, so there were times like that when And so the next time, you know, I mean, that would set a precedent for me. Oh no, he's falling into the sewers again. He hadn't been drinking or anything. I can't remember what happened. I think it had been raining. When it rains there, it really comes down like, well, we've never seen anything like it in the UK. And it lasts for hours like that sometimes, and all the roads get flooded, and the gutters are, you know, the sewers overflow, and there's like water running down the streets, and you know, I think when he was coming home in the dark, he couldn't really see where he put his foot. It wasn't even that late in the evening; it was like 7 or 8 o'clock, but it's dark by that time over there. It's not like the UK when it gets light in the summer, like till 10 o'clock, and then in the winter it's 4 o'clock. It's always around 6:30, 7 o'clock there. It's always the same, more or less the same time when it gets dark. That's one thing. The other thing that I mainly get anxious about now, which is what I'm working on, which I'm supposed to be working on and marching on, is about going out into public. Not because I can't deal with people. I'm very confident dealing with people on the phone and everything like that. I used to be very shy when I was young, like when I going away to the guide dog training centres used to be hell for me for the first couple of days. I mean, I can remember the first two times I went, because I got my first dog when I was 18, and I only had her a year because she was a terrible handful, and so then I went away again quite soon afterwards, and both times I was too shy to talk to anybody. I didn't talk to anybody for several days. And the trainers would come up and say, oh, we're really, are you okay? You sure you're okay? You know, because I was just so shy. But then once I got my confidence and I got, you know, I just observed everybody, you know, I quietly sat there, which is just something I always used to do as a child anyway. I always used to be in with the adults, listening to the adults' conversations. I never really played with the kids. I'm not talking about school, of course I did then, but like my family, I never, when we had all our cousins around, I didn't really play with them. I used to go and want to be with the adults. And so, but when I found my voice, like at the guide dog school training centres, I was really like very outgoing and quite loud, and they used to say, oh, you know, we can't believe it's the same person, you know, when you came for 2 days we're all really worried about you, you didn't say anything. Anyway, I'm not like that. It's a long time since I've been like that, you know. But going out now is an ordeal for me, because as I've said many times on here, there was an incident a year ago in December when I nearly passed out in the post office, and I was really unwell afterwards. It wasn't just like coming over faint. I've fainted in shops before, and I've nearly passed out quite a few times, and I've never, I mean, it's not nice, but I've never had the anxiety associated with it that I do now, because that ended up in a very nasty experience, which I don't really want to talk about, and I ended up in A&E, and it's just really knocked my confidence, and I wasn't on my own, I was with Obi, so it's not like I'm fine going out with him, but going out on my own now, I do have an issue with it. And it's not just that, it's because of my kidney problems. I am more tired. I think, what if I get to a point and I'm too tired to get home and stuff like that, you know what I mean? But I know that a lot of it's in my head as well, because, you know, a few weeks ago we went out for the day and I was out like from 12 o'clock till nearly 9. And I know we did walk, we sat down quite a lot of the time in the pub and the restaurant and Tesco's and Costa and all that sort of thing. But the fact that I was actually out, I had the stamina to be out all that time and to still be able to get home on the bus. We came on the bus, didn't get a taxi home, and walk from the bus stop to here did give me a good boost. But now, of course, my progress is hampered because they've got all the roads up around here and it's spreading out like a disease. They're putting in the new gas pipes, and I'm sure it's going to come to my doorstep one of these days. And I've got a feeling it's the sort of thing that might even go on for a year because it's so extensive. So I really would like to go down there one day and ask them, how long is this work going to go on for? Not because I'm complaining, but just so that I know I've got to try and find some alternative. Because if I go in the other direction, the pavements run out and it's country lanes, and that's kind of too scary because the traffic move. There's not a lot of traffic on some of them, but what does move on those roads is fast. You know, drivers go mad in the country lanes. There's a lot of bends and twists and turns, and I don't know where to go down there, and I wouldn't want to get lost somewhere like that. That would be really scary, because there'd be nowhere to sit down if I got tired. Like now, if I was on a pavement, the worst comes to the worst, I can sit on the pavement. You cannot sit down. And when there's on these roads around here, sometimes there's fields, like on either side of the country lane, and sometimes it's woodland. You just cannot sit down on the edge of the road like that when there's no pavement. And you don't know if you're up just round a bend and a car's going to come round and that'd be your lot. So that's kind of scary. But I'm trying to get on with this with marching on, and I'm not getting very far with it, but I haven't given up. And I would like to go down one day and see these workmen and ask them what the position is. But the trouble is, when you go down there, it's probably going to be really noisy, and I don't know how to get their attention. Or how safe it is to be walking around there. And Obi's working 6 days this week, so that means that he actually isn't going to be free till Sunday, when they won't be working. And I don't know about the following week. If he has a day off in the following week, I might see if I can get him to come with me. Or if he happens to be going down that way, he usually gets the bus though, and he doesn't pass that way. But if he would walk down that way one morning and ask them, I might see if he'll do that. And my sleep's all messed up like now. You know, I'll go to sleep about 6 o'clock in the morning, then I won't wake up till 11 or 12, by which time he's leaving for work, so it's not like I can go out with him to do it in the morning, because by the time I wake up and get up, he's gone. Ronan is home, and he has become anxious a bit about, not about going out. He doesn't go out much, and I really think he ought to, but he's going to get someone, you know, he's going to an organisation to help him out, fill in job applications and do stuff like that. But he's actually really petrified of talking on the phone. So it was interesting to hear Kate talking about that, because he is the same. Like, when he's applied for jobs and they ring up for a phone interview, he can't take it. He will just not answer the call, or if he answers it and he doesn't know who, doesn't usually answer it if he doesn't recognise the number. But one day this woman rang him back to do a phone interview, and because it was out of the blue, he answered it, and she started to ask him questions, and he said his mind went blank and he panicked and he just cut the call. And she kept trying to ring him back after that, but he never answered the call. And so the other day a local number rang, and he told me the number, and I said, well, that's a local number, it's an outer London number, 0208 300. It's down near like where my mum lives. And so Connor, I said, ring it back. He said, no, he wouldn't. So Connor rang it back, and it was this place called The Link. Connor pretended to be Ronan, and they said, well, we've been given your details, and we know we want to see if you've applied for any jobs and what help you need, and you can make an appointment to come down to see us. And he said, yeah, sure. Of course, when he came off the phone, Ronan said, no, he's not doing that. And we said, well, Connor will go with you, because he also doesn't like meeting people that he doesn't know. And I don't know why he's like this, because he went to school, okay. I mean, he always had problems getting him to school, but he's not a shy person. He's always very popular at school. He had lots of friends. And then he worked in the Red Cross shop for about 6 months till he left last summer, because he had an operation on some ingrown toenails and he wasn't allowed to go out for a couple of... I think that's when the trouble started, because he couldn't go out for a few months because he was supposed to wear sandals, and because he had these big dressings on his feet for like about 6 weeks, and he absolutely refused to wear sandals, so he didn't go out. And I think that's when it started, because he used to work in the Red Cross shop for 6 months, and they really liked him in there, and they said he really worked hard and he was really good with the customers and everyone loved him. So since he left to have that operation, his confidence seems to have gone out the window. He won't talk to anybody on the phone anymore. But anyway, the other day there was a knock at the door, and I think I was doing dialysis, or I just got out the shower or something. I thought, what day was it? Friday? Yeah, it was Friday, because Connor wasn't here. And I said, Ronan, you'll have to go to the door, please. Yeah, it was Friday afternoon. He went down to the door, and I heard him laughing and talking down there to somebody for about 10 minutes. And he came back up and he said it was an African chap from the link, and he gave him some like letters and information. So it was definitely, it wasn't just someone saying that, it was definitely like, he gave him all the official stuff, you know. And he said he's got a list of people he was going around checking up on that since they'd made the phone calls they hadn't got back in touch. I don't know whether this is a government incentive to get people, you know, off their backsides, the youngsters that are under 18 and sort of into some kind of apprenticeships and or something like that. Anyway, I mean, when he saw him face to face, they were absolutely fine. And he said he doesn't mind going down there now because he's already spoken to somebody that's from there. So, you know what I mean? So it's nothing serious with him. He just needs that little bit of a push. And I said, I'm really glad they came around the door like that, because now getting him to go for the appointment is going to be much easier. And I think it's really kind of sad. I said, well, you know, he shouldn't be like that at his age. I mean, I wasn't like that. I was shy, but not to that extent. I was more like, I was okay one-to-one with people. It was more like when I went to the guide dog training centres and I felt there was too many people, none of whom I knew, you know, that I found it too, very overwhelming. But as I say, now my thing is like going out into the public, and the worst thing of all, I can do things, I go to the doctors, go to the hospital, I'm fine with all that now. Go to the vets, you know, I'm good with those things. But the things that I can't really do is going, what I find very difficult is going in shops and actually queuing up to pay, because that's when I've had the trouble. That's when I was in the post office, that's when I had that incident. When I was queuing up in a shop in California a few years ago, I actually passed right spark out on the floor. When I was at Gatwick in a queue once early in the morning waiting to get on a flight to Spain, I nearly passed out. I didn't, but I nearly did. When I was in a queue at Boots paying for something, I actually wasn't in the queue. I was actually at the counter paying for something once. The same thing nearly happened again. And it's if I'm standing for a while in a very stuffy atmosphere, and that's, I find it very hard to get over, you know, my fear of going into a shop, walking around, finding what I want, which is difficult when you can't see, because you've got to get someone else to help you do it. And if it's a stranger, that's even more stressful, because I can't start saying, if it was Obi, I could say, oh, I need to sit down. But when it's a stranger, you feel like you've got to keep going, you know what I mean? So, I mean, I've never been with a stranger when that's happened. I was with Obi when I passed out, I nearly passed out in the post office. I was with my partner of the time, who was an American bloke in California. I was with my mum in Boots, and I was with my sister and the family in Gatwick. So those times I wasn't ever, so it's never happened to me that I was with a stranger, which makes it even worse, because I think one day it's got to happen. And so, you know, if you've got to go around with someone and then you've got to stand in a queue, I find standing in one place quite difficult. I'm all right if I keep going. That's what I find. I'm all right if I keep walking. But if I stand still, I can't stand still for long without, I mean, I can. You see, I think a lot of it's in my head, but it makes me really anxious. And the reason I say a lot of it's in my head is because I'm often in the kitchen, you know, for ages, clearing up, doing stuff with the dishwasher, cutting up, preparing the food and all that. And I don't even think about it then, and I don't need to sit down then. So I don't know what it is. I mean, occasionally I might have to, but in a shop, I just get this. A part of it is in my head, but it's not all in my head, because none of those fainting or near fainting incidents were in my head. They all happened for whatever reason. I think it's just a drop in blood pressure or something, and it's usually because of the conditions and because I'm standing still, and none of it's imagined. But I think I mean I've stood in queues hundreds of times when it didn't happen, and I always remember the times that it did. And now the time that it did is the most recent thing, and I haven't done it very much since. And I've done it a few times, like in Greg's. I've been in there with Obi, and we've stood in a queue. And I said, "Oh, I stood in a queue," and I've done things like that. And but when we went to Wilkinson's recently, when we had our day out, when we came to pay, he took me outside. There's some seats just outside in the indoor part of the shopping precinct, and I just sat down out there and I waited for him there, because I just didn't want to the shop, Wilkinson's, is airless. There's no windows in there. It's one of these places where there's no windows. And that's one of the places where I know it's likely to happen. But having said that, I did walk round for a bit and look at stuff, which I haven't done in a long time. And I felt fine. It's just I didn't want to chance it by standing in the queue. So that's my anxiety. It's mostly about going in queues and shops. I really can't do shops, and that's a shame because there's things I need, you know, there's times when I need clothes and things like that, and that I just can't get unless I go in person, because I won't buy clothes online because I just think, it's, you know, if they don't fit, it's a waste of time. You've got to start sending them back and all this. Anyway, I think I've gone on long enough, really. 24 minutes. Pause recording. Oh, I said this wasn't going to be very long, but it's much too long, and I'm really sorry, but I'll speak to you all later with day 17.